Welcome to your deep dive. Today, we're going to crack open this whole world of habits, like how they form, how they basically like rule our lives, and how we can use that knowledge to actually make changes.
It's crazy how much we do every day is just driven by these unconscious patterns.
Yeah. And for this deep dive, we've got a mix of some really cutting edge research and then some really powerful personal stories. I am so ready to have my mind blown. So let's get to it. This whole idea of the habit loop, it's kind of like the foundation of all this, right?
It is. And it's surprisingly simple. You have a cue, which is like a trigger in your environment that leads to a routine, the actual behavior. And then there's a reward, which is what your brain really latches onto.
Okay, so it's like our brains are always looking for those shortcuts, ways to save energy.
Exactly. Habits are basically our brain's way of going on autopilot for the things we do regularly.
Okay, but how deeply ingrained are these habits? Like, is it even possible to rewire them, especially the ones that aren't serving us well?
Well, let me tell you about Lisa. She was a smoker who had tried to quit so many times. Nothing really worked until she took a trip to Cairo, and it kind of triggered this like profound shift in her whole thinking. It was such a powerful experience that it led to a totally new habit, and she was finally able to kick smoking for good.
Wow, that's incredible. So something as simple as a trip, like that could actually rewire her brain.
Well, the really amazing thing is that researchers actually saw it happen. They did brain scans before and after, and they could literally see her old neural pathways like being overtaken by new ones. It's physical proof that even those really ingrained habits can change.
That's wild. It's like our brains are more malleable than we think.
AR. And there's this other case that really drives this point home. It's about this guy, Eugene Pauly.
Okay.
So he had this brain damage that left him unable to form new memories, but he could still learn new habits. He would go for a walk every day and always ended up back at his house, even though he couldn't consciously remember the route.
Wait, so even without conscious memory, his brain was still forming these habits? That seems almost impossible.
Yeah. It really highlights the role of this part of the brain, the basal ganglia. It's super involved in automating our behaviors. Like, it's kind of like our brain's autopilot, you know? It's taking over these routine actions so our conscious mind can focus on other things.
Okay, so our brains are constantly forming these habits, running on autopilot for a lot of what we do. But what's the driving force behind them? What keeps us going back for more?
Cravings. Our brains, they learn to anticipate rewards, and those rewards create cravings that basically fuel the habit loop.
Oh, so it's not just the reward itself, but the anticipation of it.
Exactly. Think about it like this. Researchers did this experiment with monkeys, and they could actually predict when a monkey would crave juice just by looking at its brain activity. Like, the anticipation was so strong, it created this whole, like, measurable neurological response.
That's crazy. It's like that feeling we get when our phone buzzes with a notification. We instantly crave that hit of dopamine, even if we know it's probably just junk.
Yeah, it's the same mechanism at play. Our brains are wired to seek out those rewards, and the anticipation is really what drives us to repeat behaviors.
So understanding this whole mechanism, that's key to breaking bad habits and forming new ones.
Absolutely. But it's not just about understanding the science. There's also this crucial mental component to changing habits, and it's all about belief.
Okay, so it's not just about understanding the habit loop, but also believing that we can actually change. Is this where willpower comes in?
It's more than willpower. It's about having faith in our ability to actually transform ourselves, you know, to rewrite those ingrained patterns.
So how do we cultivate that belief? Is it something we're born with, or can we develop it?
Well, think about Tony Dungy, the football coach who completely turned around a perpetually losing team into champions. He used this unique approach to training, and it focused not just on physical skills, but also on instilling this real belief in his players and the system. He had them repeat certain phrases and visualize success, which helped them develop this deep conviction that they could win.
So it's about training the mind as much as the body. That's really powerful. And he was incredibly successful, which shows that this approach really works.
It does, and it also highlights the importance of these things called keystone habits. Mm. These are like small changes that end up having this ripple effect, and they influence other areas of our lives.
I've heard about this, like making your bed every morning can lead to a chain reaction of positive habits throughout the day.
Exactly. It's all about creating that positive feedback loop. One small win leads to another, and pretty soon you're building this momentum toward bigger changes.
That makes sense. So if we can, like, identify those key habits, the ones that have the most impact, we can leverage them for like bigger personal transformation.
Exactly. It's like finding the lever that moves the whole system. And sometimes those keystone habits, they can seem totally unrelated to the actual outcome you want.
Like the CEO of Alcoa, who became obsessed with worker safety. It seemed kind of like a weird focus for a CEO, but it ended up transforming the entire company culture.
Exactly. He believed that by making safety the priority, you know, above all else, it would create this ripple effect of positive changes throughout the company.
And he was right.
He was. Alcoa became one of the most profitable and safest companies in the whole world.
Wow, that's a powerful example. So it's not always about making the obvious changes, but about finding those key leverage points that unlock those big transformations.
That's the key. It's about understanding how our habits are all interconnected and how small changes can lead to like massive results. Hmm. But it's not just about individual habits, you know, they can actually drive social change too.
Hmm. This is where it gets interesting. So we've seen how habits can shape individual lives, but can they also like shape entire societies? That seems like a huge leap.
Think about the Montgomery bus boycott. Rosa Parks's refusal to give up her seat wasn't just this like spontaneous thing.
Right.
It was a cue that activated these like pre-existing social habits within the Black community. It triggered a coordinated response that basically became a turning point in the whole civil rights movement.
So it's like her action tapped into this network of shared habits and beliefs that were already there.
Exactly. Her action was the spark, but it ignited a whole movement because it resonated with deeply held values and this like shared desire for change.
So social habits combined with the right cue can create this like incredible momentum. That's really powerful. Hmm. But there's a flip side to all this, right? What about when habits become destructive or even addictive?
That brings us to the ethical part of habit formation. Where do we draw the line between individual responsibility and the influence of our environment? You know, when do habits become something we really have to fight against?
Yeah, that's a big question. Where does personal responsibility end and the power of these ingrained habits take over? Mm-hmm. It's like a whole philosophical debate.
We actually have these two contrasting cases that really highlight this whole dilemma. Kenneth Parks, who killed his mother-in-law while he was sleepwalking, and then Angie Bachman, this gambling addict who lost everything.
Wow. Those are some heavy examples. Yeah. So in Parks' case, his actions were driven by like unconscious habits, but in Bachman's case, there were conscious choices involved, even though addiction was definitely a factor.
Exactly. Both cases raise some really deep questions about free will and you know, how much we're really in control of our actions.
It's fascinating and kind of unsettling to think about how much of what we do is driven by these unseen forces.
But the good news is we're not totally powerless against our habits, right?
Right. We can change them. And there's a framework for doing just that.
Okay, tell me more about that. What's the secret to breaking free from those bad habits and forming new positive ones?
Well, it starts with identifying the routine, the specific behavior you want to change. Then you experiment with rewards to really figure out what's driving the habit, what's that underlying craving you're trying to satisfy. So it's about really getting to the root of the habit, understanding what's really fueling it.
Exactly. Once you know that, you can isolate the cue, the trigger that sets off that whole cycle.
So if you can like pinpoint that cue, you can actually disrupt the pattern.
Exactly. And finally, you need a plan, a clear strategy for how you'll respond to the cue with a new routine that delivers the reward you want.
So it's like we're rewiring the circuitry of our brain step by step.
That's a great way to put it. It's about really understanding the mechanics of how habits form and using that knowledge to our advantage.
This is incredible. So we've gone from the basics of the habit loop to understanding the power of belief, the impact of those keystone habits, the role of social habits in actually shaping movements, and even the ethical issues around habit formation. It's been quite a journey so far.
And we've just scratched the surface.
I can't wait to dive even deeper.
Yeah.
So what else is in store for this deep dive?
It's really interesting how these same principles that we've been talking about, like the cues, routines, and rewards, they apply not just to, you know, personal habits, but also to how products and even ideas like catch on.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're saying like marketing and advertising are kind of tapping into our habit loops. I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Take the rise of Pepsodent toothpaste back in the early 1900s. You know, it wasn't really about the toothpaste itself being so revolutionary or anything. It was more about creating this new habit, brushing daily.
Okay, so how'd they do that?
Well, Claude Hopkins, this marketing guy, he needed a cue, right? Something that would trigger the whole brushing routine. What he landed on was actually pretty clever, dental plaque.
Wait, but doesn't everyone have plaque? Like, it's not some new discovery.
True, but Hopkins kind of positioned it as this, like, this problem, something you could see and even feel, and Pepsodent could solve it. He gave people a reason to brush every single day.
So he, like, created a need that wasn't really there before.
Not a need, exactly, but more like awareness. He tapped into people's desire for a clean, bright smile. You know, that feeling of freshness. That became the reward.
Ah, clever. And by associating Pepsodent with that reward, he basically created a nationwide habit. Wow, it's almost like he, like, manufactured a craving.
That's exactly what he did. And it wasn't just toothpaste either. Think about Febreze.
Febreze, the odor eliminator. What's the habit connection there?
Okay, so initially they tried to market it as the solution for strong odors like pet smells, smoke, but it wasn't really taking off.
Why not?
Well, because people who lived with those smells like all the time often just became like desensitized to them. There wasn't a strong enough cue to make them use Febreze regularly.
Oh, I see. So they had the solution, but not the right trigger.
Exactly. So they had to shift gears and they started marketing Febreze as like part of a cleaning ritual. So the cue became the act of cleaning itself and the reward, that feeling of satisfaction having a freshly scented home.
Brilliant. They basically hijacked an existing habit, cleaning, and just added Febreze to the routine.
It's a perfect example of how understanding those habit loops can be used to influence behavior, like on a huge scale. But let's go back to what we were discussing about belief.
Right, because knowing the mechanics of habits is one thing, but actually making changes that stick, that's where belief comes in.
Absolutely. Belief is like the secret sauce. It's the thing that transforms a rewritten habit loop into a lasting change.
So how did that actually play out in real life?
Well, take Alcoholics Anonymous, for example. It's one of the most successful habit change programs out there. And it's built on this foundation of belief, you know, belief in a higher power, belief in the program itself, and belief in one's own ability to recover.
That makes sense. So those beliefs kind of provide a framework, a support system for people going through something so difficult.
Exactly. The 12 steps are basically a guide for rewiring those deeply ingrained habits and finding something to believe in, something bigger than yourself. It's just crucial to that whole process.
It's interesting because it's not just about, you know, like religious faith, right? It's about believing in the possibility of change itself, in our ability to overcome any obstacle.
Researchers have found that even for people who aren't religious, having faith in something, whether it's a program, a community, or even just their own inner strength, it's essential for successful habit change.
Yeah, it's like that saying, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Our beliefs shape our reality.
They really do. And that's why it's so important to like cultivate this mindset of growth and possibility, to believe that change is actually within reach. You know, we've been talking about individuals and social movements, but what about the habits of organizations? Can those be changed too?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, organizations are made up of people, so it stands to reason that they would have their own set of habits, right?
Exactly. Think about Paul O'Neill, the former CEO of Alcoa. He was completely obsessed with worker safety, which, you know, might seem like an odd focus for a CEO, but he believed it was the key to unlocking these, like, bigger changes.
So worker safety was his keystone habit.
Precisely. O'Neill believed that by making safety the top priority above all else, he could create this ripple effect of positive changes throughout the company. And he was totally right.
What happened?
Well, his focus on safety forced Alcoa to completely revamp their communication systems, empower employees at every level, and like foster this culture of continuous improvement. It wasn't just about reducing accidents. It was about changing the whole mindset of the organization.
So he used this one very specific habit to transform the whole culture of the company.
Exactly. And it wasn't easy. You know, there was a lot of resistance, but he was persistent and the results really speak for themselves.
What kind of results?
Well, under O'Neill, Alcoa's profits went way up, their stock price skyrocketed, and they actually became one of the safest companies in the world.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So changing the company's habits is possible, but it takes a strong leader with a clear vision and the willingness to, like, push for change.
That's a huge part of it. But it's also about finding that leverage point, that one keystone habit that unlocks a cascade of positive outcomes. Sometimes it takes a crisis to really shake things up and create the right conditions for real transformation.
Like a wake-up call that forces people to, like, reevaluate their priorities.
Exactly. Think about the King's Cross fire in London back in 1987. It was this terrible tragedy that exposed the serious flaws in the London Underground's safety protocols.
Right, I remember reading about that. It was a huge turning point for the London Underground.
It was. After the fire, there was this big push for change. The organization had to really confront its deeply ingrained habits and implement all these new systems and procedures.
So the crisis created the urgency and the momentum for change.
Yeah, that's often what it takes. But it's not always about reacting to these external crises. Sometimes leaders can create their own burning platform, you know, to drive transformation.
What do you mean?
Like when Lou Gerstner took over IBM back in the early 90s, the company was like on the verge of collapse. But Gerstner recognized that the real problem wasn't their finances, it was their culture.
So he like created this sense of urgency even though there wasn't an immediate threat.
Exactly. He shook things up, challenged all these long-held assumptions, and like fostered the sense of urgency throughout the organization. He basically created this internal crisis that forced IBM to adapt and evolve.
And it worked.
It did. IBM went from being this like dinosaur on the verge of extinction to becoming a tech giant once again.
So even without a major crisis, there are ways to kind of like nudge organizations toward positive habit change. But how do you do that? Where do you even begin?
Well, one really effective approach is to focus on small wins. Start with a specific, achievable goal and just celebrate every success along the way.
So break down big goals into smaller, more manageable steps.
Exactly. It creates momentum, builds confidence, and it makes the whole process of change feel a lot less daunting.
That's a great approach. But it's not just about setting goals. It's about getting people on board with the changes.
That's absolutely crucial. You need to involve people at every level of the organization, you know, empower employees to identify problems, propose solutions, and really take ownership of the whole change process.
So it's about creating this culture of shared responsibility and continuous improvement.
Precisely. When people feel like they're part of the solution, they're much more likely to like embrace new habits and make them stick.
This whole conversation about habits and change has been fascinating, but it also raises some like really important ethical questions. I mean, if we can actually influence people's behavior, where do we draw the line between persuasion and manipulation?
That's a really crucial point, especially as companies use more and more data and technology to target our habits.
Yeah, like those personalized ads that seem to know exactly what we're thinking.
Or those loyalty programs that like reward us for spending more and more money.
Right. It's like they're using our own psychology against us.
Yeah, it's important to be aware of these tactics and to make conscious choices about how we engage with them.
So we need to be like more critical consumers to ask ourselves if these companies are genuinely trying to help us or are they just trying to exploit our habits for profit?
Exactly. We need to be mindful of how our habits can be influenced and take steps to protect ourselves from that manipulation.
This brings to mind Angie Bachman, the woman we talked about earlier, who got addicted to gambling.
Yeah, her story is a real reminder of the dark side of habits and how our vulnerabilities can be exploited.
I mean, the casino knew she was a high roller. And they used all sorts of tactics to keep her gambling, like comps, free meals, that special treatment.
They were essentially cultivating her addiction, using their knowledge of habit formation to, you know, maximize their profits.
It's a classic example of how businesses can use our psychology against us.
And it raises those ethical questions about the responsibility of companies to protect their customers from harm.
Right. Where do we draw the line between persuasion and manipulation?
It's a complex issue. No easy answers. But Bachman's story reminds us that we need to be vigilant to understand how our habits are formed and to just be aware of the potential for that exploitation.
This whole conversation is making me think about like the whole nature of free will. If our actions can be so easily influenced by outside forces, how much control do we actually have over our choices?
That's a really deep question that, you know, philosophers have been debating for centuries, and neuroscience is adding a whole new layer to that debate. But even though we might not have complete control over our habits, we're not completely powerless either.
So it's kind of a balance between understanding the forces that shape our behavior and taking responsibility for our choices.
Exactly. It's about being aware of our vulnerabilities, understanding the tactics that can be used to influence us, and then making conscious decisions about how we want to live our lives.
Okay, so we need to be aware of our habits, the cues that trigger them, the routines we follow, the rewards we seek. But what can we actually do to change them? What are some like practical strategies for actually rewiring those neural pathways?
Well, one really powerful technique is called habit stacking. It's basically linking a new habit to an existing one.
So, for example, if you want to start meditating every morning, you could like stack that habit onto your morning coffee routine.
Exactly. The cue of making your coffee triggers the routine of meditating, which makes it way more likely you'll stick with the new habit.
It's simple, but effective. A way to piggyback on an existing habit.
Another strategy is to create a visual reminder of the habit you want.
Like a sticky note on the mirror, or maybe a habit tracker app on your phone.
Exactly. The visual cue acts as this constant reminder of your intention, making it more likely that you'll stay on track.
Yeah, those visual cues are great for keeping us focused.
They are, and don't underestimate the power of accountability either.
So find a friend, a family member, or even a coach who can support you on your journey.
Exactly. Share your goals, track your progress together, and celebrate each other's successes.
Having that support system can make a huge difference.
It really can. And when you're trying to break a bad habit, one of the most effective strategies is to identify and just eliminate the triggers.
So, like, if you're trying to quit smoking, avoid places where you used to smoke. Get rid of your lighters, ashtrays, and surround yourself with people who don't smoke.
Precisely. It's about removing those cues that trigger the unwanted behavior.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. And it's also important to find a substitute habit, something positive and healthy that you can do instead of the negative habit.
Like if you're trying to break the habit of snacking on junk food,
yep.
You keep a bowl of food on the counter or maybe go for a walk instead.
Exactly. The key is to find a substitute that satisfies that same craving or need that the bad habit was fulfilling.
So we're not just trying to, like, suppress the bad habit, but we're replacing it with something positive.
That's the idea.
This is all really helpful. I'm starting to see how understanding the mechanics of habit formation can give us so much more control over our lives.
It's empowering, isn't it?
It is. It's like we're finally getting this glimpse behind the curtain, you know, understanding the forces that actually shape our behavior. You know, we've covered so much in this deep dive already, from the science of habit formation to the role of belief to the ethical complexities of, like, influencing behavior. But one thing that keeps coming up is the power of social networks. How do our social connections influence our habits? And how can we harness that power for positive change?
That's a great question, and it's a topic that deserves its own deep dive. But to put it simply, our social connections have a huge impact on our habits. We tend to adopt the habits of the people around us.
So our social circles shape our behavior. That makes sense.
Think about how your eating habits might change when you're hanging out with friends or family, or how your exercise routine is influenced by your workout buddies.
It's like there's this invisible force pulling us towards conformity.
And this social influence can be incredibly powerful, especially when it comes to creating movements.
We already talked about the role of social networks in the civil rights movement, but there are tons of other examples.
Yeah, like think about the rise of environmentalism, the spread of fitness trends, or even the viral nature of those online challenges.
These movements often start with a small group of people who share a common belief or goal.
And then, through the power of social contagion, their habits just spread outwards, rippling through networks of friends, family, acquaintances.
Like a chain reaction, with each person influencing the next.
And as the movement gains momentum, it becomes harder and harder to resist. The social pressure to conform is huge.
So how can we use this power of social networks for good? How can we use it to create positive change?
One key is to identify and connect with people who share your values and your goals.
Find your tribe. Those people who are already living the life you want.
Surround yourself with people who inspire you, motivate you, and hold you accountable.
Because when you're part of a supportive community, changing habits becomes much easier.
You have that built-in support system, a source of encouragement, and that sense of shared purpose.
And don't underestimate the power of weak ties either.
Right, those casual acquaintances, friends of friends, people we interact with less often.
Yeah, those connections can open us up to new ideas and perspectives.
They can be like bridges to new social circles, expanding our horizons and influencing our habits in positive ways.
So nurture those weak ties. Attend industry events, join those online communities, strike up conversations with people outside your usual social circle.
You never know where those connections might lead.
This whole idea of social contagion is fascinating. It's like our habits are constantly interacting with the habits of everyone around us.
And remember, social influence goes both ways. We're not just influenced by others, we also influence them.
So be mindful of the habits you're modeling. Are you setting a good example for the people around you?
Exactly. By consciously cultivating positive habits and sharing them with others, we can create this ripple effect that extends way beyond our immediate social circle.
Now, let's talk about a specific example of how social habits can be used to create a really thriving community.
Okay, Rick Warren, the pastor of Saddleback Church, is a master of this.
Saddleback Church, that's one of the biggest churches in the U.S., right?
It is. And Warren created a whole system that makes it really easy for people to connect with each other, find their place within the church, and develop a sense of belonging.
So he's using social habits to build a stronger community.
Exactly. He uses small groups, volunteer opportunities, social events, all to foster that sense of community and shared purpose.
It's like he's creating a habit loop for belonging.
And he emphasizes the importance of personal growth and spiritual development, giving members a framework for building those positive habits in all areas of their lives.
That's a great example of how understanding social habits can be used to create a thriving, supportive community.
It is. But creating a successful movement or a community, it's not always easy. It takes vision, strategy, and a deep understanding of human behavior.
And sometimes it takes a willingness to, like, challenge the status quo, to disrupt those existing social norms, and push for real change.
Think about the early days of the civil rights movement. Those activists faced incredible opposition, violence, and just huge social pressure to maintain the status quo.
But they persevered, fueled by their belief in justice, their commitment to equality, and their understanding of the power of social habits.
They knew that by changing people's habits, by shifting those social norms, by creating this new sense of identity for African Americans, they could achieve lasting change.
And they were right. The civil rights movement transformed American society, dismantling segregation, expanding voting rights, and paving the way for a more just and equitable future.
It's a real testament to the power of social habits to create lasting change, even when facing their huge obstacles.
And it's a reminder that we all have the power to influence the world around us one habit at a time.
We really do.
Yeah, it's just wild to think about how these small everyday things we do, they can have this huge ripple effect, shape not just our own lives, but like whole communities and even like societies.
It really speaks to the power of habits as like a driving force in how we all behave.
Totally. And as we start wrapping up this deep dive into habits,
yeah,
kind of curious, are there any other really notable examples of how social habits have been used to create that positive change?
Oh, there are so many, but one that jumps to mind is Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MADD.
Oh, right, MADD. They've been so incredibly effective in raising awareness about the dangers of drunk driving.
They have, and a lot of their success comes down to like their understanding of social habits and how to actually shift them.
Okay, how so?
So MADD was founded by this mother whose daughter was killed by a drunk driver, and she realized that to create real change, she had to change not just the laws, but social norms too.
Oh, so it wasn't just about tougher penalties for drunk driving, it was about changing people's like attitudes and behaviors about it?
Exactly. MADD launched this whole public awareness campaign, and it really targeted social habits. They encouraged people to like designate a driver, speak up if they saw someone about to drive drunk, and of course, support stricter laws.
So they created these new social cues and expectations around drinking and driving.
Exactly. And they were super successful. They really helped change the culture around drunk driving, made it a lot less socially acceptable.
That's such a powerful example of how understanding social habits can like lead to positive change on a huge scale.
Yeah, it shows that we're not just going along with social norms. We can actually shape them too.
It's pretty inspiring to think about that we have that kind of power.
We do. It all starts with understanding how habits work, both individually and as a group.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's bring it back to that individual level.
Yeah.
What are some like key takeaways that our listeners can, actually apply to their own lives?
The biggest one is you're not stuck with your habits. You absolutely have the power to change them.
I love that. It's so empowering.
It is. It all starts with being aware. Just like pay attention to your habits, notice what triggers them, the routines and the rewards.
Once you're aware of them, then you can start to change them, right?
Right. And remember those four laws of habit change. Make it obvious, make it attractive, make it easy, and make it satisfying.
Yeah, those four laws are such a simple but powerful framework for changing behavior.
They are. And one more thing, don't try to change everything at once. Pick one habit, Focus on it until it becomes automatic, then move on to the next one.
Small changes, but over time, they can lead to amazing things.
That's the key. Consistency, consistency, consistency.
So we have the power to change our habits.
Mm.
And our habits, they have the power to change our lives.
And together, all our habits, they have the power to change the whole world.
That's a really powerful thought. We're not just like watching all this happen. We're a part of it, shaping our destinies one little habit at a time.
That's a great way to put it.
Well, this has been such an amazing deep dive. I feel like I've learned so much about these hidden forces that are shaping how we all behave.
Me too. It's been a really cool journey.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of habits.
It was my pleasure.
And to our listeners, remember, you have the power to create the life you want, one habit at a time.
So go out there and build the life you want.
We'll be back next week with a whole new deep dive, exploring a brand new topic, uncovering those hidden forces that shape our world.
Until then, keep learning, keep asking questions, and just keep pushing the boundaries of what you think is possible.